The following podcast is for mature audiences only, so hey, look, if you're under 18, just turn it off, okay?
Do you know the secrets of making friends? They are so simple and easy. That looks easy enough, and Joey is going to try it out.
Hey guys, it's Miss Jenga.
And it's Freckles.
We are missing Captain Jack today.
Yeah.
He's at work.
Oh well.
I know.
Recording sessions being what they are.
I'm not going to get a spanking this week.
Nope.
What is up with that?
You don't know that.
Oh, we're here with Max. How are you?
I am so good, Miss Jenga and Freckles. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, we came to all the demos a couple weeks ago and had a great time and have wanted to get you on. I also came to a kink lab a while ago. I talked a little bit about that on the podcast. And you are the leader for both of those, or facilitator.
I am. I co-produce kink lab with Ari.
Yep. And we're going to have her on as well in a couple weeks. So. Yeah. So we wanted to bring you on the podcast today to talk a little bit about BDSM and how you got into it. And I really admired, the way that you facilitated both of those events. All the demos, we talked a little bit about that
last
after
week.
We
yeah.
Went. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was your impressions?
I loved it. I really didn't have any idea what to expect. I mean, other than it'll be this and this thing. And I was like, okay. All right, so...
Pick a topic. I'm taking you to a dungeon.
Exactly. Right, yeah. You get to choose. You get
choose
to choose.
Your own adventure.
And whatever the group says is going to be is what we talk about. And then it was a whole bunch more than that, and it was really awesome.
Yeah, we thought it was just going to be the top three. So for us to have you run through all the demos was really interesting. So that was cool. Yeah.
Could I get away with just three next time?
I don't know. That's what we thought. You probably have to
take it up with Ari, but yeah. it would be, yeah, because then expanding into that two-ish hour format with just the three demos, that could be some serious deep dive kind of stuff.
I liked it.
I did. I liked all the information that we got. I learned a few tips and tricks, which was nice.
Thank you. It's become one of my favorite events, actually. I've been teaching since 99, and it's all the evaluation forms I've collected in those however many years. One of the top comments has been, that was really great. My favorite part was the demos. And Ari and I said, well, you know, what would happen if we did 3 hours of only demos? And I went, that's crazy. And so we did it. and so, yeah, we spend 15 minutes with a little bit of introductory stuff and then spend 3 hours doing as many demos as I can fit in on people who show up based on topics that people select, which is kind of ridiculous. I mean, it's like flying without a net, but it seems to work okay.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw you looking at the list, because they didn't give you the list until it was ready. It was go time.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know until it's go time.
Right.
Exactly. And I looked at you, looked at Will, or Freckles, and I said, oh my gosh, this is improv. Like, he doesn't know what's going to happen next. This is great.
I remember saying really that. Cool. Nobody had ever made the analogy to improv, but that's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I do it, I think, this is such a bad idea. but my workshops look a lot the same. I mean, I have a lot of structure to my workshops, but the demos are always, or almost always, 95% of my demos are volunteers in the audience, and I bring them up and say, okay, I want to demo this tie, or I want to demo this single tail technique or something, and who would like to help me demo this? And so it's pretty rapid-fire negotiation, and often people I don't know well or at all, and...
Now, you just started doing all the demos this year, correct, in 2015?
Into last year. We've done about five of them, I think. I did one actually a year and a half ago in a similar format that was not intended to be part of a series, and then it worked so well, we said, oh, let's do another one a year later, and then we said, let's just do it monthly. So we're doing it roughly once a month now.
Yeah, and we've got that added to the New Horizons calendar for the Don't Tell Mama Outbound Adventures. So that's going out in our newsletter. So all
Thank
of our NH people hopefully will get there and have some fun experiences. So how did you get into teaching? Like, what is your superhero origin story, Max?
Well, there's sort of two origin stories. There's a how did I find kink story, and there's a how did I find teaching story, and I'll I'll answer the one you asked, and if you want the other one,
okay,
I'll do that one too. I found the, I'm 59, I just turned 59, and I found the public kink community in 92, so I was in my mid-30s, and really had not, I had kind of had odd thoughts, but really had not had much structure around my kink or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of finally found some community, which was challenging. And in fact, one of the first events I found was at New Horizons. It was the Kinky Couples events that happened there 20 years ago.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I spent about 7 years learning and finding community and kind of honing my own skills, which sounds much more deliberate than it was. It was pretty haphazard. And in 99, at that point, there was really just two or three national events that happened once a year that were kink conventions.
Okay.
And one of them was called Living in Leather, and it moved around the country, and it was in Fort Lauderdale. And the chairman of the event, who was here in Seattle, Spencer Bregstad, said, Max, why don't you teach a rope class? And there were hardly anybody was teaching rope at the time. Hardly anybody was doing rope at the time. Actually, it was not trendy like it is now. That's another story. and so I was going to go to the event anyway and said, sure, I'd love to teach a workshop. And so I went there and I taught a rope workshop and went, you know, I've taught in other parts of my life before and I really mm-hmm. like teaching and I'm passionate about it, even though I'm not a teacher. And this was fun and maybe I should do a couple more of these. And so that was in 99 and I'm still teaching and really enjoyed it.
Nice. And you teach rope and you teach a myriad of other things as well.
I do. I teach a lot of rope because it's kind of the gateway kink drug, I think. And because
yeah.
I like it a lot, I'm pretty fond of it. But I teach a lot of other topics. I teach, I'm in some ways fondest of the soft topics like sort of DS and service and how to build BDSM relationships mm-hmm. as opposed to how to throw a whip.
Mm-hmm.
But I do a lot of rope classes. I do a lot of, I do occasional single tail classes. I teach other impact toys like caning and spanking. And then I do, there are some topics I sort of just don't do because they're well covered and mm-hmm. I want to be appropriately deferential to other folks in town who mm-hmm. cover those topics. But I cover a pretty vast array of subject matter in my private instruction than when I do private lessons and coaching here in my home.
Nice, nice. And then how did you get into kink in general? Because so you've been teaching since 99 and you said 92 was your first foyer, so through the Kinky Couples.
It was...
Said it's kind of stop and go.
It was very stop and go. It was a long road. I came out of college and married my college sweetheart, and it was an utterly vanilla relationship. and it was great. It was actually pretty certainly for where I was at the time. It seemed pretty sexy and pretty open and pretty warm and loving. And we went 14 years and it ended, and that was fine. But it was a good thing. But it was not a kinky thing or a poly thing. Somewhere in the middle of that, I had kind of little flashes of kink interest, but had no vocabulary and just no language around it because it was not anywhere in the culture that mm-hmm. I could find.
And the internet wasn't really invented yet.
The internet was not, truly was not there. And so it was just kind of like I had these sort of amorphous, naughty thoughts and never occurred to me I could actualize them really.
Did you just feel weird?
I did. And somewhere in the middle, I actually went to the Crypt in Seattle, which was a very different place mm-hmm. than the current Crypt. It was this little tiny room that was this dark, smelled like leather, extremely male, kind of terrifying place, actually. Which, I mean, I love it. These are the places I hang out now, right?
But right.
at the time, it was kind of terrifying. And it was a gay leather store. And so I went in and I kind of worked out my courage and bought what turned out to be a really cheesy leather hood. And I brought it home to my wife and hid it for like a couple months and then sort of brought it out one night and said, honey, can we like do this while we have sex? And she was pretty game. She said, okay. So I put it on her and we fucked and I can say that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And we fucked and we kind of got done and I said, what do you think? And she said, not so much, really. And so I concluded from that people actually didn't really do kinky things. It was a completely, retrospect, I don't understand it. But I extrapolated from that this was all fantasy stuff and occasionally porn, although there wasn't much of this porn out there, and that actually nobody did kink. And it was years and years before she and I separated, and I kind of started looking around and went, actually, lots of people do kink. It's just she and I didn't, right?
Sure,
right.
Sure.
And so then I had a whole bunch of other kind of odd sort of halting steps in. And it was really, the barriers to finding it were really high. I have a bunch of stories, but kind of a really representative one was I was somewhere probably in, I don't know, 90 or so, I was in Portland, Oregon on a mm-hmm. business trip and went to a big sex toy store called Spartacus, who they manufacture and sell toys on Burnside there. They're still there.
Mm-hmm.
And inside Spartacus was a bulletin board, by which I mean, you know, a cork
with
thumbtacks.
Yeah,
and they had an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper with little tear off phone numbers on the bottom, and the piece of paper said Oregon Association of SM monthly meeting, and it was Orgasm was the acronym, and I thought, oh my God, SM, it's like people, like there's a place to go do this thing. And so I tore off a phone number and made sure it didn't say anything on the phone number tear off except the phone number.
Right.
Because I was so terrified. And I put it in my wallet and I carried it around truly for a couple months. And I kept looking at it and I was afraid to call. And in retrospect, it's like, I mean, I don't know if I can really explain this right 25 years later, but I was truly frightened to call. And I can't imagine what I thought was going to leap through the phone and get me. But
right.
So I finally gathered up my courage and I went to a phone booth because you wouldn't want to make this kind of phone call from home.
Right.
And there were no cell phones, really. I mean, there were, but not adequately. And so I went to a phone booth and stood in the phone booth and dialed this number, and I had waited too long, and it was disconnected.
Oh, God.
And it was like another year before I found community. Oh. And I have several stories like that. It was just really, really hard to find real people and to find education and to find role models and to find community.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm, you know, any of you who know me or see me teach a workshop, it's why I'm so community focused now and so anxious to make introductions and do education. And is I just remember how hard it was. And it's still challenging for people.
It is. Yeah.
It's easier to find. But I know lots of people who drive up to the CSPC and sit in the parking lot and burst into tears and go home. And they do that three times before they go in the first time. And there's lots of people with stories like that.
A lot of similar stories with NH as well. Just exactly that, where they go and they go to orientation and then, nope, just not going to happen. And then they come
back.
Even
walk in the door and walk right back out.
Yeah.
Do that 2-3 months in a row for an open house or something like that. Yeah. Not to mitigate anyone's experience, but I think it's very similar as well as in the, you know, gay community. And we hear a lot of stories about people coming out of the closet and how painful that is and that type of thing. And I know as I was coming out to different family members and close friends that were more vanilla, I went through that too. I mean, it's the unknown. What's going to happen? Maybe the phone will be disconnected and I'm off the hook.
Yeah, it's oddly terrifying. And it kind of says kind of terrible things about how we view sex and relationships in our society, that there's such a high bar there, but I see that bar being lowered. You know, it's easier now.
I had a very similar experience, being interested in kink, like just out of high school and like just trying to figure out what it was that I was thinking of and put a name to it. And knowing some people that were in that community and having them say, no, you're not really interested in this, and we're not interested in helping you learn or hooking you up with anybody who can, and then just kind of getting discouraged and turning way away from it.
Why did they do that? Did you just not look like you were supposed to look, or
I guess
act like
I didn't
wear
have,
the right stuff or something?
I guess I don't know.
I mean, I have a similar experience. There was a bar in, again, about the same couple year time period, there was a bar down in Pioneer Square in Seattle that had a once a month fetish night thing, and I kind of heard from like a friend of a friend, I mean, again, I had no resources, no connections, but I kind of heard that there was a party that might have something kinky, sexy, something there, and so I went, and it was on roughly First and Yesler, and I went downstairs because there was a downstairs part to it, and there was a little basement dungeon that was like 15 feet by 15 feet with, and it had a window, so you could, from the rest of the floor, you could see into that room, and it had a door. And I looked in the window, and there were like, you know, I don't know, 100 people in there. I mean, not really, but it was very crowded, and they were like all wearing leather, and there was like somebody getting flogged with like a flogger and a St. Andrew's cross. I went, oh my God. And I like rushed around to the door, and there was a guy standing at the door who would not let me in.
Oh, wow.
And in retrospect, it was exactly the right decision on his part because I was so unsocialized. I mean, I don't know what I would have done, honestly.
Right.
But I think I'm a pretty cool guy, but I truly don't know what I would have done if I had gotten in that room, right? I mean, I was the person that we all keep an eye on now. I was, you know, I was kind of the clueless, you know, single hat guy with good intentions, but really no socialization and no understanding of the norms of that subculture or anything. So I went back and looked through the window and 6 months later, the guy who was doing that flogging became one of my mentors and best friends. But that took 6 months for that to happen. So
that's cool. Yeah. So you talk in your class, or at all the demos anyway, that we went to, about not being judgmental about different cultures, and there's differences in the BDSM community on the East Coast, West Coast, South part of the country, mm-hmm. the Midwest, that type of thing. What has been your experience with that? What are some of the differences that you see culturally that...
It's there's kind of two dimensions. Thank you for kind of coming back to that topic. There are a lot of cultural differences still geographically, mm-hmm. which I find endlessly fascinating with airplanes and internet and
right.
email, and yet you go to New York and there's a different tone than if you go to Texas or Florida or San Francisco even. Mm-hmm. What I find there, though, is it's usually not... that part is usually not sort of judgmental, or we're better than you, or we do it. It's just different, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, there's actually a regional tone to these things, and different, sort of slightly different protocols, different play styles, different toys that people use,
vocabulary.
Yeah. I mean, Seattle is very big on blood sports and needles and piercing and cutting and blood play kinds mm-hmm. of stuff, and that's all. I mean, 25 years ago, Seattle was really the epicenter of the leather dyke community, and mm-hmm. they all like playing with blood, and so. Everybody else kind of got into it, and it got to the point where, I mean, I don't know, a dozen years ago, I was at a national event with my then partner, and she went into, they had a sealed off area for blood play, she went in there with her partner to do a blood scene, and they started fussing over her because she was kind of young looking, and it was like, okay, you know, now tell us exactly what you're going to do, and we want to keep an eye on you, and
right.
da 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 da, and where are you from? She said, da da da, I'm from Seattle. I said, oh, wow, what do you need? Yeah. What do you do? What can we do for you? here, take this corner. We'll clear an area out for
right.
you. It completely changed the tone. But the other thing that happens is that there is, amongst the different communities, I think not so much regionally, there is still, I don't know, I think there's just a really human urge to be better than somebody else, sort of sadly. And so, yeah. So, for instance, I have friends who are in the spanking community, which is a very distinct community from the kinky community, and they... You know, they have their own rituals and protocols, and they have their own toys, and they may have a dozen hairbrushes that they use, and they pick the right hairbrush for the ritualized over-the-knee morning spanking. Mm-hmm. And they look at people that I would call kinky people, and they say, oh, you guys are sick. I mean, that's fucked up to, like, hit somebody with a flogger. Right. We don't do that.
We're not weird. We just like to get yeah. spanked with hairbrushes. Right? Yeah.
So no purpose-built toys, just things you've had laying around.
Well, it's just spanking. It's just spanking.
Right, okay. Right?
It's not...
It's not
deviant.
I've had that conversation with one of my partners a lot of times, people that she plays with that are like, no, 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 I am not kinky. This is just something kind of weird that I do.
Yeah.
And
it's funny
wow.
how people
yeah.
self-define that, right? I have people show up alarmingly frequently for private lessons, and they say, well, you know, we're just kind of exploring kink. We don't really do anything serious. And in fact, we kind of want to do some rope, but we know it's really dangerous to tie people up, and so we want to get some lessons so we don't hurt our partners. So really all we do is we do, like, some spanking, and we, like, choke each other out. And I go, can we talk about the choking each other out part? Because that's actually more terrifying than anything I would ever teach you.
Right.
And then there is a whole kinky world that is full of, I mean, we'll do rope, and we'll single tail people till they bleed, and we'll stick needles in you, but pissing on people, that's fucked up. Who would do water sports? Or I do water sports. I mean everybody knows urine is clean, that's okay, but scat, that's horrible. What kind of fucked up person would do scat? Right? Or age play. Who would do age play? Right? I mean, there are just all these edges and subdivisions, and we are all such a marginalized community. I think it's really important that as long as it's relatively safe, which to my mind is really up to the players, not
yeah.
the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as long as it's consensual in any sort of reasonably defined version of that word, I just think it's sort of none of our business. And that, you know, ideally I would like us to all be supportive of each other, but at the very least we should not be condemning and undercutting each other. That
right.
seems like a pretty reasonable stance. And it's always disappointing when I see that. And I think a lot of it is just thoughtless. I don't think it's mean. I think it's just... It's like, well, I would never do piss play, and so I'm, you know, I use floggers and rope and stuff, but piss play people are weird. And it's like, well, actually, let me tell you some things I know about piss play. And it's like, yeah. Oh, well, that's not so bad. And so, mm-hmm. again, often it comes back to education.
We sure. do have a tendency to other people, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a good way of saying it.
Yeah, it comes up a lot. It comes up in the swinger community. It comes up in the poly community. Mm-hmm. It comes up in the kink community, obviously. It's no, those people are
it sure does.
Different to
us. I'm not a swinger. Swingers are fucked up, but I'm poly.
Right?
I'm polyfidelitous, right? I'm not polyamorous. I'm. It's like, What? What's, you know, first of all, what's the difference? And second of all, even if you can define it, why does it matter? What? Yeah. Why do you have to be better than them?
Yeah. Or why do you want to get love involved? We can just fuck.
Yeah.
Like, ugh, guys, it's okay. Yeah. Everybody can play. It's fine. There's enough room in the tent.
Right. The circus tent.
So you took my question, my starting question.
Oh, I thought you had some more questions.
It's not good. I have a couple rolling. Others. All right. Yeah. So, different kinds of play that you teach classes for, or I guess to go back to the DS and the service play, you teach those kinds of, like, is it techniques? Is it lessons in, is it
NDS meaning Dom Sub?
Dom Sub, sorry, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it tips and tricks, that kind of, like, if you're trying to set up this kind of scene with a sub, here's some things that you can do, or is it more along the lines of how do you create a relationship, live a relationship, or have a relationship that's off and on because your partner lives in another town?
Yeah.
Or just cover all of those things.
Yeah. So you know, the rude podcast answer, of course, would be yes. I talk too much. I'm always delighted to ramble. So let me ramble
a little bit. Please, yes.
I might start with just kind of a little a snippet from kind of my introductory stuff when I teach intro to kink classes. They have a lot of different labels, but I often find myself explaining kink to sort of relative new people. And the thing that I usually start with is I draw a distinction between SM and NDS, because people get them kind of conflated in their minds, I think.
Yes.
And so I actually, being a geek myself and having discovered that almost all kinky people are geeky people, there's a Venn diagram you can do like looks like that. But and everybody knows what a Venn diagram is, which is kind of funny. Right? So you could actually draw a two-dimensional chart with a line, a horizontal line that had SM on it, and at one end of the scale are people who like receiving physical stimulus, and they like being spanked, slapped, tickled, ice cubes, whips, nipple clamps. I mean, whatever it is, they like receiving that physical sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And the pejorative word for that sensation, of course, is pain, but it's strong sensation in one form or another. Tickling could be anything. And the word we use for those people, of course, is masochists, because we like strong words.
Mm-hmm.
And the other end of that scale are the people who like delivering those sensations, and those people are sadists. Those are people mm-hmm. who like spanking or whatever. And so then in the middle of that scale, there's a zero point in my little model that says, I really don't give a rat's ass about sensation. That's not something that interests me. I'm not a giver or receiver. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So you can put a dot anywhere on that line and say, well, I like receiving a little bit of sensation, or I like delivering a lot of sensation. And, you know, there's no universal scale for that thing, but you know, you can kind of imagine that you can put a dot somewhere on the line
yeah.
that represents you in that moment, and that line, that dot, will vary depending on who you're playing with. It'll vary depending on where you are in your life. It may, you know, you may evolve from a masochist to a sadist, or the other way around, or you may act differently with different partners, you may act differently with different moods, you know, how your day went, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's about physical sensation play. And then there's another scale, so you can draw a line that crosses that goes up and down, and that is about power exchange, and that is mm-hmm. really about DS, right? And so one end of that scale is people who want to be in charge of things, and one end of that scale is people who would like to submit and be told what to do in some fashion. And once again, there's a zero point on that scale that says, don't care, doesn't really melt my butter one way or the other. And there's lots of dots on that scale that range from, well, I really want to be in charge of everything, and gee, I just want to be told what to do sometimes in some mm-hmm. contexts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So lots of variability. And so then you get four quadrants out of that scale, right? The four corners of the graph. Told you it was geeky.
And, I'm down.
And so, but the point here is you can combine those in any way. And so people, so you can be, the two obvious quadrants are, you can be a dominant sadist, which is mm-hmm. the, you know, come here, boy, stand here, I'm going to hit you.
Uh-huh.
Or the submissive masochist, it's the, yes, mistress, you know, please hit me here. But I also know people who are in the other two quadrants. I know lots of people in the other two quadrants who may be submissive sadists, it's like, okay, please tell me how you'd like me to hurt you. And there's actually a bunch of people like that. Mm-hmm. And there are dominant masochists. It's like, here's my whip. I'm going to stand over here. I want you to hit me 5 times on the shoulder and 5 times on that shoulder. I'll tell you when to stop, right? There's nothing submissive about that exchange, but they like receiving the sensation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I kind of do that little mini lecture, because then there, what happens is people go to describe themselves, which most commonly is when they're describing themselves to a potential date or play partner, or, you know, a new friend or social group or whatever. And they use words like, well, I'm dominant because I like spanking people. And it's like, well, actually, maybe not. And so, you know, you might just be a sadist, right? You might not be dominant, or maybe you are dominant. And then I have people say, well, you know, I want to be a submissive, but I hate it when people tell me what to do. I just like being flogged. And it's like, well, okay, that's fine, but you're using the wrong word, right? You're a masochist. And the language is important, because it's not about labels, but it's about being able to self-identify and to find partners and to find resources.
Right? And to communicate.
That are compatible.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I try hard to sort of help people pick apart the difference between being dominant and a sadist, because in the culture and the language, they're the same thing, even though on the ground they're very different, and being submissive and a masochist, because again, they're very different things. And then sort of after you absorb that, there are some other things that I think are still different. I think bondage in many ways is interesting, because it can be a tool for sensation. You can mm-hmm. make bondage very rigorous physically, or you can make it very comfortable and pretty neutral. I mean, you can make it like a hammock.
Right.
And it can be a tool for conveying a power exchange, you know, ha, struggle, you can't get away, or it can be very collaborative and very power neutral. And so bondage doesn't really fit on that graph anywhere. It's almost kind of like a third axis, I think. And then interestingly, the other, at least one of the other things that doesn't fit there is the whole notion of fetish. So people who want to pretend to be kitties, or are all about latex, mm-hmm. or high heels, or, you know, all of those kind of bubble wrap, kind of whatever it is, furries, just all the million different fetishes, again, kind of don't fit that scale, I think. So there are a lot of different ways to slice it up, but when I talk to people about kink, and especially when I talk to newish people about kink, I try to sort of talk about all those different ways to look at it. And the point is specifically not to restrict their view, of course. It's actually to expand their view. It's to be able to say, oh, I thought that I wanted this, but as you describe it, really this is the piece that interests me,
mm-hmm.
or this is the piece that I want to explore, and it helps people get a little leg up and be more effective in their explorations.
Excellent. Yeah, and I think that exactly answers my question.
Cool.
Which is cool.
Answered that question before.
Well then.
I actually love answering that question, so thank
you.
It's that's an important part of kind of what I do. And then after that, I do lots and lots of sort of specialty workshops and specialty private lessons, mm-hmm. and all those different topics. And if somebody shows up and says, I want to learn how to single tail my partner, then it's like, great, I have a single tail. It's one of my favorite things. Let's do that. If somebody says, I want to learn how to do rope, mm-hmm. I say, let's go into my basement and let's do that. And if somebody says, I'm having trouble making my DS relationship work, then we sit in my living room and we have a discussion, and we kind of look for tools and techniques and protocols and how to communicate around that. And, you know,
right.
And in many ways, those are, for me, the most exciting things to talk about, because mm-hmm. they're always different, right? A square knot kind of always looks like a square knot, and a DS relationship, it's never looks like anybody else's DS
right,
relationship.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And so they're endlessly fascinating, and the discussions are endlessly challenging mm-hmm. for me, which means I get to learn as I have them, and I'm just always honored to have those kinds of discussions with people.
Absolutely. So what have you got on the docket for the upcoming weeks for teaching?
I should have had a calendar in front of me, shouldn't I? Well, the right answer is to go look at bondagelessons.com.
Yeah.
And without, I'm oddly unprepared for this.
Oh, sorry. Well, you've got all the demos.
No, I've got all the demos coming up on June something, 4th, June 4th. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I have a repeat of my Flow Like a River rope workshop on May 29th, because the bunch of folks who were extremely excited about that workshop couldn't make it to the one at the CSPC, at the center here in Seattle.
And tell me about that. What is that about, Flow Like a River? I enjoyed the description you gave earlier.
Thank you. Yeah. Flow Like a River is about some soft skills around rope. It's about how to handle rope and maneuver around rope and move rope around your partner. So it's not about how to tie a knot or how to tie a particular suspension or how to do a particular technique thing, because to my mind, there's way too much focus on that stuff anyway. But it's about, if you have a piece of rope to draw across your partner's arm, how do you do that in a way that is effective, that feels sexy, that doesn't cause rote burk, mm-hmm. And that conveys whatever emotional impact you want, which might be control, it might be sensual. Mm-hmm. And so it's 3 hours of, which turns out not to be enough time, because there's a lot of that.
It never does.
But it's 3 hours of techniques on how to move rope around people in ways that are effective and sexy and convey the messages that you want to convey. And I've only taught it for a couple of years. It's a relatively new workshop, and I actually love teaching it, partly because it makes me stop and think about why I do things, right? I mean, I've been doing rope for 25 years, and it's really interesting to sort of stop and go, well, of course I do it this way, but if I'm going to tell somebody else to do it that way, I need to say, here's why I think it's a good way to do it, which is always a fascinating thing and always, you know, helps me get better, and it's amazing to me the way I've watched people sharpen up their technique after taking this particular mm-hmm. workshop in ways that are really much more generally useful than here's how to do a chest harness or how to tie your wrist together. So
nice.
So there's Flow Like a River. Thank you. There's all the demos. We have a Kink Lab coming up in July, which is the mini conference we do, which is an unconference where we get to define our own topics and people volunteer to teach, and it's, I could go on and on about that, but it's an amazing concept.
And it is, and when I showed up for it, there was the little anal retentive part of me that was like, nope. Wait a minute. This has no structure. What is going on here? And I loved it. I fell in love with it because what I really saw was the radical participation that you got from all the attendees and how much more meaningful that was for everyone. So you provide the space, you facilitate, you teach a couple of segments at the Kink Lab, and mm-hmm. then people just come and put topics on the board in certain time slots, right?
We had 30-some topics, as I recall, last time in a one-day session. And we've actually decided that for the next one on July 12th that I'm not even going to teach. I mean, I may propose a topic, and we'll see if anybody cares, but there was so much excitement from everybody else that the one I taught just kind of got in the way of all the other ones that everybody else wanted to teach, which is so great.
Yeah. Nice.
But I did have a similar response. It's like, wait a minute, nobody's in charge of this. And it's like, okay. Step back, Max. It'll be okay. And it was great. It was great. Yeah. And much of that was Ari, who had, I mean, I have a tremendous amount of kink experience, but Ari brought the unconference experience to the table, and it was amazing.
And she does a great job with that. So.
And then I take the summer sort of off a little bit. I slow down in my public workshops because mm-hmm. in Seattle we value both months of summer and so my
all 59 days of sun.
Exactly. So I've been teaching a monthly workshop at the CSPC, for instance, since 2003, and I take a couple months off in the summer because it's a 2:30 to 5:30 time slot, and nobody wants to spend Sunday afternoon.
No.
Inside. So,
yeah.
So I do a lot of private coaching. I've got a couple more, as we just mentioned, and then I pick it up in the fall. I do probably, I don't know, two to five private lessons a week with people coming in and having either technique discussions or relationship discussions, and that'll keep going all summer because that's easy to schedule.
Yeah. Good deal. Well, if somebody was going to get into rope, is your favorite, correct?
You know, I have a lot of favorites. Actually, if I had to pick two, it would be rope and singletails, which are oddly different. But
so if someone was piqued by your discussion about rope, what would be the first thing? Like, can they just go down to the Home Depot and pick up a yard of rope and get started? What is your recommendation?
You know, oddly...
Or cut it off their boat. Like, what should they be doing here?
No, oddly, that almost would be my recommendation, is don't fuss about it too much. I started out as a sailor. Much of my rope, in fact, was because I spent 25 years as a sailor before I started tying people up. The world has gotten very prescriptive about rope. It's like, you have to do it like this, and we have a huge Japanese fetish, which I'm kind of offended by because it's sort of cultural appropriation to me as opposed to homage.
Yeah.
So there's a long discussion about that, but you can go to many, many workshops and learn the proper ways to tie people up with the proper Japanese names. And what I would suggest is start out by going and buying some rope, select rope that you like based on how it feels.
Okay.
So if you want it to be scratchy, buy that. If you want it to be silky, buy that. Don't worry about how strong it is. Don't worry about stretch. Don't worry about anything, because you shouldn't be tying people up and hanging them off railroad trestles to start with anyway. Right. Tie them up in bed, tie them up on the floor. Roll around, have fun, switch back and forth, do whatever you want. Be a little thoughtful about if somebody says, oh, that's that, I don't like that, or that hurts in a bad way, then stop doing that.
Yeah.
And at some point, if you do a little bit of that, and that's fun, come find a lesson somewhere. I mean, I teach. There's lots and lots of rope workshops around. Mine are particularly good, of course, but there's actually lots and lots of good instructors nationally. I mean, it's just, it's become an international thing. So there's a actually an annual rope conference that happens called ShibariCon, Memorial Weekend, and lots of other rope stuff. But I love teaching rope.
Fantastic.
I got to say, the demo that you did of the rope on all the demos, last one, was just amazing. And it just,
I was super hot.
I'm just getting into rope now myself. Yay. And I'm enjoying it. And I'm reading and I'm looking up things and I'm tying knots and, you know, thinking, okay, if I do this, that kind of, you know, that kind of thing. And I watched you bind and hog tie your subject in like a minute and a half. Like, oh.
With one piece of rope, probably. Maybe two.
I think it was two, and it was the loop, the tie, the arms are done, the hair was in a knot back in, and then boom, and on the floor, legs tied, and I was like, oh, okay, I have a thing to shoot for. Wow. Wow.
And what I'd really like to emphasize,
I know it's 25 years.
Well, I mean, it's funny. That's kind of exactly not what I was going to say. I mean, in a sense, yes, it's 25 years, but people build this up to be harder than it is. And I, you know, my fellow educators will be cranky with me for saying this, but my objective when I educate is actually to enable people to have a good time and to be safe and to be sexy. It's not to make them feel so inadequate that they have to come back for 10 more workshops.
Right,
I mean, if they do a good job, they'll come back anyway. So really, there's kind of the 80-20 rule thing going on with everything, to include rope. And that is, I think, a couple basic techniques. And really the biggest key is, after you get a little bit of skill, which is not, I mean, 1 or 2 3-hour workshops and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, this is a hard thing to do from books or even video. I think it's really helpful to be in person with somebody. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't take a lot of in person. And, you know, it can be a friend, right? I mean, any kind of resource that you've got where you can actually mm-hmm. touch things and touch rope and touch people. And then after that, a lot of the challenge, in my opinion, is to not be focused on the technique mm-hmm. and to be focused on the sexy thing that you're doing with this person.
Yeah.
And to have enough technique that you're not going to do something terrible. And then you incrementally get better with the technique because you're having a good time.
Right.
And if you're so focused on technique, you're actually not having a good time, probably. Or what may happen is the person who's doing the tying is having a good time because they're having like a geeky good time.
Yeah.
And the bottom, if you've set the expectation right, maybe the person getting tied up is okay because they're having an educational good time themselves. But if they're looking for sexy, they're not getting it.
Yeah.
And if they're looking for profound, they're not getting it. And if they're looking for power exchange, they're not getting it, because what they're getting is their piece of furniture that's getting rope put on them.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that kills rope and rope scenes. And so,
so
my recommendation really is, I mean, yeah, I hope you love this. I hope you spend 25 years doing it, but don't wait 25 years to think you're good at it. Right.
Well, no. Yeah.
Or to have fun with it. Of course, do that really quickly. And that's true for everything. I actually make the same statement about single tails. When I learned to use a single tail, I was told, go buy one, spend a year hitting pillows, do not hit a human being for a year. And I look back at that, and this was 20 years ago, that was people who knew how to use a single tail protecting their franchise. It was not an education statement. And so what I tell people now is, buy a single tail, show up, let me give you 2 or 3 hours of instruction, go home and practice. And the way you should practice is, take your partner, put a leather jacket on him, and hit him.
Oh, yeah. And, that makes sense. Yeah.
You know, and you'll see where you leave marks on the jacket, and when you think you're good enough, then take the leather jacket off and be a little thoughtful about what you're doing. And it's just not that hard.
Yeah.
The hard part is the scene.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part is building the emotional connection and having a good, positive experience. The hard part is not throwing the whip or tying the knots.
Yep.
Yeah. Mindfulness.
Yeah. Mindfulness. Nice. That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so delighted to have been invited. Thank
Good.
You.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we hope that people come out to all the demos and sign up for the Kink Lab and Flow Like a River and
Me
all
too.
The good stuff.
BondageLessons.com is kind of the focal point for all of my activity.
And we will share that link on our website and make sure that people know where to find you on the Twitters and the Facebook and
Absolutely.
The internets.
Yeah. And if you want to get in touch with us, we're going to post all the links and everything to the site where you downloaded this very episode. If you want to get in touch with us, we're theoafacepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @MissJenga and @theoafacepodcast. And you can find us at theofacepodcast.com, just where all of our details and episodes and things are linked. Thank you very much, Max.
Thank you. It was a delight to be here.
Excellent. Looks like we all gave about 110%.
Jeez.
That looks easy enough. And Joey is going to try it out.